This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
What's up, Atlanta? This is the Mouths of the South podcast brought to you by Dirty South Soccer in the palatial 680 The Fan Studios. We are brought to you by Wellstar, it seems. Josh Bagriansky and the face this week, Joe Patrick from Dirty South Soccer, joining us in place of Sam Franco, who just couldn't make it tonight. He had other responsibilities he had to do. Guys, it's a good week. It's a good end to a little road trip that Atlanta United went through. A couple things you want to hit first. Tito Villalba wins goal of the week.
Shocker. He did.
Shocker.
Yeah.
You don't typically see Atlanta United win in these fan polls, so it's a huge surprise, obviously. But this one, I think this one was deserving.
Yeah, like finally. Yeah. We won the one that we actually deserved.
There you go. A couple other things that I haven't been on Atlanta United Reddit in forever.
Yeah.
Because I think for the most part, it's kind of it's like the worst. You draw the worst out of fans in those forums. So I went in there for the first time and, I obviously saw a bunch of stuff on all the ticket nonsense that's going on. And, then I realized that, Eric Ometi is still coming to town, which I feel like I've kind of forgot about over the last week or so, and that people are actually going to meet him at the airport at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah. I was talking to you guys earlier today and I said, you know, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to go down there, not because necessarily I want to see Eric Ometi, but I want to go down there because I want to talk to the people who are there to see Eric Ometi. Because
you guys are crazy if you're going down there at 5:30 in the morning.
That's a story. As a journalist, that's a story, right? To interview these people who are going down there.
Because think about what you're paying for, because one thing, you're not paying for this. This is not free. You're paying for the gas to get down there. You're paying for the parking to park there for the maybe hour or two that you're down there.
Yeah.
Your time is always valuable, so there's that. You're going to fight traffic, presumably, on the way back to wherever you're going.
Yeah, it'll be rush hour.
So I hope you guys are willing to take the day off on a Friday.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a – and that's assuming he's actually going to land at 5:30.
Now, that would be – what if all of the investigative work was incorrect and he's not even arriving at that time?
Right. Now, we're just assuming that he's on this flight. Like, like this isn't confirmed by us.
Look, you guys are doubting the abilities of Atlanta United fans to figure this stuff out.
Yeah.
I don't.
That's true. You call them Reddit. I call them the I team. You know, like, they're just like on top of everything.
It does surprise me how much inside knowledge comes out in Reddit.
It's crazy. They're great.
It's amazing.
I love them. They're so good on like Spanish language articles. You know, yeah. they probably have Google alerts set up for like every player. You know, every player on Atlanta United, their name and everything. So yeah, they're a great source of information.
There was a more credible forum that already did this kind of stuff. But whatever. But anyways, how was the week, guys? How was the week leading up to today?
I feel like I just got off Atlanta United bender. Like I just feel like I've been on like a. Like when you can't stop drinking, it's like there's just game after game after game. I don't even know where I am right now.
It feels like a little bit of last year.
It does. It kind of feels like, yeah.
Post All-Star game.
You know what's weird is now we have the week break, and I'm like, what? I thought this was, you know, September of last year when we had all the matches packed in back-to-back. I've kind of had this weird rhythm how matches are supposed to go, and obviously it's totally incorrect. I'm like, where's the random, you know, 3.5-week break in July?
Right,
like,
right.
What happened to that?
Yeah, this time last year, like, our players were all, like, on a boat, like, on a yacht.
Yeah.
They were, like, vacationing together in Miami. It was just, like, yeah, it was just just like a booze cruise for those guys.
Because this was the break last year where the stadium was supposed to open. Is that correct?
Yeah,
initially,
I want to say,
and so they moved a couple games back around this time, and then So
we played like one game in July or something like that. We played like Sporting Kansas City, and we had like 3 weeks off before it or something. It was crazy.
Miami trip.
Really odd. Yeah, it almost seemed. I remember last year it felt like a All-Star break or something.
It just seemed
like a normal break.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. I remember last year the what was it? 21 games in a matter of, or what was it? Was it 21?
Yeah,
games?
It was insane. We had like 7 or 8 games in September or something like that.
It got to the point where it almost seemed like we had weekend game, midweek game, weekend game.
Yeah.
Well, that was the entire month, and it was all at home,
right?
Yeah,
it was. It was in 30, a matter of, like, was it 28 days? I forget what the actual
thing was. I'm looking at the schedule, and after we've got Seattle this weekend and then D.C., and then I don't think there's back-to-back weekends at home for a long time. So which is normal, but in my head I'm like, what? Where are all these home games? You know, but obviously, it's just a little more balanced this year. So yeah, a little bit better.
Yeah. One other thing before we wanted to dive into kind of the meat of the podcast, listening to the game, I watched the game at Hudson FC, and I was it wasn't that I got to get a good sense of what how Kevin Egan was calling the game. After I got back, by the way, Hudson FC, this is the first time I'd actually been there. Fantastic place to watch an Indian match, especially if you're not going to be able to get to the Benz or they're away from home. It's a fantastic place. It's everyone there's Atlanta United. It's not like you're eating at Hudson Grill where you know you've got half the people just there to eating. It's just Atlanta United fans drinking, watching the game. So that was fantastic. It reminds you a lot of Brewhouse.
Mm-hmm. It's a soccer bar.
It's exactly what it is. So that was cool. But listening to Kevin Egan call the goals and call the penalty kick on Almiron, it was something special. It got me thinking as to, one, I cherish the fact that Kevin Egan is as good as he is, mm-hmm. because I don't think he's going to be calling games just for Atlanta in the near future. Not that he's not just doing that, but I think at some point he's going to get plucked by one of the big networks to do. I could potentially see him being the guy that calls most of the U.S. men's national games because I think he's that good. He's that dynamic. You know, when you look at American soccer broadcasters and the ones that what do we always kind of complain about when it comes to the way Americans call soccer is that it's almost dry. It lacks that passion.
It's
that
like
maybe,
too structured, too regimented. Yeah,
Kevin Egan is the best of both worlds, finding a way to kind of not that he's American, but finding a way to almost making it American, making mm-hmm. it a great American way to call a soccer game. And he finds a way to do that week in and week out.
If you think about it, I think he's been kind of perfectly groomed where he's been at BM because he's kind of surrounded by a lot of the European influence there. You mm-hmm. know, obviously they show a lot of Serie A, a lot of La Liga, but there is definitely it's an American-based network and – you know, he's surrounded by the Ray Hudsons of the world, stuff like that. So, like, you know, he's kind of got, like, a great melding of experiences with who he's been around there. I love him. I think he's great. I think he calls the game in a very clear way where you know what's going on. You know, you're never confused. He's not misidentifying players. But he also puts, like, a really fun spin on it, you know, Venezuelan Viper.
Yeah, exactly. No, and then, like, I'm thinking of the second goal, the goal that Tito Villalba scored, and the way he called it, and the emotion he got behind, behind that call. And it's not the goal you hear in with the Spanish language media, but it's still something that it's like the best thing Americans can, or you know, non Hispanics can do to call a game is to do it in the way that Kevin Egan does it, and just cherish the games that you hear him call and you know really remember these moments because when he's gone he's going to be on to bigger things, not necessarily better but bigger things, and we won't have the luxury the gift of Kevin Egan. The fact that he has started with Atlanta United has been again a gift.
I was going to say the fact that they got him back for this year just after having done it last year, I thought that was a really good get. I just think it was a very shrewd move by the staff to axe Alan Green and get Kevin Egan back.
And you guys obviously actually know, you know, work with him, you know, so as members of the media. So mm-hmm. you guys know him a little better than me, but I definitely as a fan enjoy listening to him. And I do think, you know, you mentioned it's a shrewd move, Joe. I think one of the only misses that I would think we can get on the club for was Alan Green last year. I didn't think was particularly popular with the fan base. And I think the club recognized that and recognized also the affinity for Egan that he had generated in his very small amount of time here. He did an interview with Sam, I think, for the podcast.
Every interview he does or he's done with Mazda South podcast with Sam has been fantastic.
So the club, I mean, a club that's pretty well known for recognizing talent, kind of plucked one in the announcing pool too. So kudos to Atlanta United as well for hitting a home run.
It was something very small. I mean, it was just one game that he did, and really, it's just a pattern that he's had throughout his time with Atlanta United. But for some reason, I just wanted to give him props because he does such a great job of calling an American soccer game.
Yeah.
He does.
And I think, going back to Alan Green just real quick, I don't criticize the club for bringing him in. I mean, he was a very good get and a very ambitious hire by the club. And I just, to your point, Josh, I think it was just very smart of them to realize, despite, you know, the effort that was put in to bring him here, that there was a better fit with Kevin Egan. He just fit the fan base better. He represented the voice of the fan better. I think he just connected with the fan better overall. And yeah, like you said, I think we're just very, very happy to have him here for as long as he.
What was his peach call? Peach from the Paraguayan.
Yeah,
I feel like that's gonna live with me forever.
Yeah, that's the quintessential Atlanta United goal call right there.
Yeah, that was awesome. Not only that, but the goal was fantastic. I will say one of the misses to most fans, or in the eyes of most fans, have been the recent high price hikes, percentage increases in the prices of over these tickets. It's been a hot topic over the last couple of days. When was it they announced it? Was it yesterday?
It seems like it was a decade ago, but it was like yesterday.
That's all we talked about the last 48 hours.
I think it was exhausting. Did people wake up to the email Monday? No, not Monday.
I think it was Tuesday.
What's today? Thursday? Yeah, so I think it was Tuesday morning. I think it was Tuesday morning that email went out. Yeah. I wouldn't know. I didn't get one.
So I want to kind of tread on this delicately because I don't have season tickets, as most of you probably already know. I sit in the press box. I have a press credential. I don't know what you're feeling firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
I can certainly sympathize, but I certainly, my money isn't where my mouth is or anything like that. I can look at this objectively. You do have season tickets.
I do. So just to put this out there, so when I was with Dirty South Soccer, at the time I was a staff writer, and I was just going to games. I had a season ticket. You know, I bought a season ticket. I was a founding member as a fan and went to those games until I was, you know, got more involved on the media side of it. And yeah, and now I have had a press credential for like a season and a half. I basically got my press credential middle of the year last year. Basically, actually, the first game in Mercedes-Benz Stadium was my first game in the press box. So that's kind of my situation. And so just to put this out there, since I've been in the press box, I've either been transferring a ticket to somebody or selling it. And usually I just sell it for $40. I have just a general supporter section season ticket.
Right.
And so that I did not get an email for to renew my ticket. So I would need to talk to a ticket rep, and I will once the fires kind of die down here in a bit. But I think mine's been taken away from me because I had to get rid of it for every game. Right. Yeah, I didn't want it to go unused. So,
and I'll be interested.
They're like,
right?
Joe Patrick, I don't think he's using those seats. I'm pretty sure he sits somewhere else.
So I'll be interested to see, like, I would like to get it back if I can, just so that I can, you know, either give it to a friend or something like that. Mm-hmm. If not, I understand. I totally understand why, you know. I'm not using it.
And we all kind of have different perspectives.
No, before you go, I was going to say, Josh, yours is that you are a season ticket holder, right?
Yes, I'm a season ticket holder.
And you sit every game in the stands.
I've never missed a game.
Wow.
So I'm the voice of the people.
On this podcast, for
pretty
sure.
Pretty horrific, I think. And though I was told I was league media a month ago.
He was part of the club. Right. You heard this, right?
Yeah, I received no benefits at all from that whatsoever. But yeah, so I mean, you're getting Joe, who's kind of experienced both. Eric, who absolutely deserves an opinion on this, obviously.
Yes. You're getting the most objective debate when
you're
getting
every
this.
Perspective.
Yeah. And we want to tell you this so, you know, you just kind of know, you know, our opinions on this are weighted, but we want you to know exactly where we are coming from, because we understand this is a sensitive issue to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So.
So it's been in club that it's gone up about 29%. Across the stadium, it's up 10 to 20%.
Okay.
Is that correct?
I think that sounds about right. Club went up the most, didn't it?
Club went up the most. I think what I saw was 29%.
Uh-huh.
And that does seem high. And I feel like there's certain ways that – look, and the way I wanted to do this was look at the points in for Atlanta United as the club, and then look at the points, you know, for or against the fans, for or against Atlanta United. I wanted to kind of break it into those two kind of categories. And so I want to start with the fans first. I've heard that Atlanta United, the way they did this is they just sent out the email saying, hey, we're happy you're a founding member. We're happy you're a season ticket holder. Here's the prices for 2019.
That's what I heard too.
So that email was, I think maybe could have been handled a little better. If I'm being critical of the club, yeah, it could have been handled a little better. Maybe give the fans a little bit of a warning, rather than just kind of, you know, plopping an email with the price saying, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem a little, I don't want to say careless, but maybe not fully thought through, because you know people aren't going to like, you know, ticket hikes, ticket yeah. price hikes. You know that's not going to be a very popular subject when it comes to talking to the fans. You know, you know people are going to like spending more money for something they already have. I agree.
I think there should have been a communication strategy behind this. I think, mm-hmm. you know, I talked to Jeremiah O'Shan just a couple days ago, and he talked about how the Seattle Sounders have been through something very similar last year. They called it like a market correction or a price correction to season tickets or something, but they said that, you know, they said that, hey, just so you know, tickets are going, you know, in some sections, not in all sections, but in some sections, tickets are going way up, and this is to, you know, level out the playing field, because you right. know there's a big discrepancy between the values of what these seats are actually worth.
I think that's really what is causing the imbalance of ticket increase across the stadium. Because as someone who has looked a little bit, you know, so I have two tickets. There are a lot of people like me that just have two tickets, and I usually give one to a friend for face value or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people who have 2-3 tickets. First of all, who are just selling the other two. And Atlanta United started as a very affordable, and it's still very affordable, but between the Bobby Dodd thing, which I think maybe was anticipated, and the fact that just a new team, you start off with an extremely low price point for what became an extremely exclusive high value of ticket. And I think you saw the biggest proportional increases from face value to what was going secondhand on StubHub or whatever. I think you saw the greatest increases in club and in the supporter section, because mm-hmm. You know, the supporter sections were going for, I mean, the season ticket was about $20 to $25 a game, right?
$21 prorated right. for mine.
But yeah. if you're on the outside and you say, "Oh, this seems like such a great product, so much fun," $50 is great, because yeah. that's below face value for a Hawks game, Falcons game, whatever. And then, of course, something similar happens in the club section, where the raw amount of dollars are just so much more. So you're seeing, I think, increases in those two areas, because the perceived value is clearly much higher than what the club was previously selling those tickets for.
I mean, I have a deal with my friends for my $21 prorated tickets. I have a deal with them for $40. And the reason is because I still make a little bit of money after the yeah. break. Ticketmaster obviously is taking money, and they're still getting a ticket for cheaper than they could get it anywhere else.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a win-win-win. So that just shows that the value of the ticket is
And that's exactly what they're, you know, what they're like, looking at. That's yeah. exactly what they're looking
let's
at.
Let's look at, and I don't want to get too far away from this before we, because we're going to dive into those issues a little bit later. But has there been another instance where Atlanta United hasn't maybe properly or in a maybe communicated in a better way whatever the message was? Because I'm trying to think, outside of this, I think maybe what everyone got angry about was the name and the logo.
Maybe stadium delays. I don't know. I mean, they still communicated that, though.
They could have made Barco official earlier. That was really obnoxious. No, I think we've said, I mean, with the things that they've gone through, they've done a very – this is the first kind of misstep they've taken, in my opinion, in terms of communication.
I would say it's not a misstep in actually the action they've taken with uh-huh. raising the prices. To me, it's just the strategy behind it.
Gotcha. So we can all agree maybe should have handled that a little better.
And uh-huh. I think most fans agree on that.
Yeah. No, I know.
Yeah.
The kind of profan thing that I can fully get on board with is that supporters who have been there since the beginning, founding members, you know, for the most part, getting a break, getting a discount, or kind of grandfathered prices, you know, for an extended period of time. You mm-hmm. know exactly how long. The thing that I think a lot of people would appreciate it is, I want to know that my founding member tickets are going to be a certain price, or fluctuate mm-hmm. between a certain price for an extended period of time. This kind of like up in the air going from, because it was just a marginal increase last year.
Yeah.
And then you had this big jump this year.
Yeah.
And that's been the biggest complaint that I've seen all over Reddit, all over Facebook, is that it's the big jump that is kind of surprising everyone. They don't want that trend to continue, which from what we've heard isn't going to be a pattern or anything like that with Atlanta United, right?
Yeah, I think you could argue they kind of spared maybe for optics and business reasons, they kind of spared the founding members from the increase last offseason. I mean, this is something that I think could have been done before. Maybe it could have been done more in a half and half type way between the two seasons, so it kind of seems like it's all at once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that might have also happened is everybody renewed their tickets.
Right.
So you
right.
weren't able to get enough new people in the door on those higher prices.
Right.
And I think they've kind of realized, look, because people – I know people that moved out of Atlanta, kept their tickets.
Still going, yeah.
They still love it. They come whenever they can, but – you know, they sell half their tickets.
Yeah.
You know, so they're like, well, everyone's just keeping their tickets, so we can't.
Why would they want to lose money on
right,
that?
Exactly.
Why would they want to lose money and give up their tickets?
So that's the other thing that I think happened is they realized we're going to have to increase the founding members because we're not getting enough new people in the door paying
yeah.
these high
and you
prices.
Want to, and you want to spread the – you want new people who aren't getting in there. You know, you want more – you know, you want to spread the game. You want to spread the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. You want to spread what's going on inside that stadium to as many people as possible.
So. I feel like there always be some kind of like feeling of disloyalty or kind of like we've been kind of forgotten about by mm-hmm. fans or supporters whenever something like this happens. And that
– It's
not really the case. It's just the kind of the nature of sports.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For the most part. I mean, look what happened with Falcons fans when PSLs became a thing. A lot of them felt disrespected. A lot of them canceled their, you know, or weren't going to get PSLs.
Well, and what I told you was that, you know, I understand the feeling of frustration or the feeling of, oh, man, you know, they went up. My tickets got more expensive. That stinks.
Wants to pay more.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course no one likes that. But to me, what is kind of off-putting or what I don't really understand is like the way people feel emotionally about it. Like they're personally owed this price
yeah.
because of like what they've given to the club so far or something, or like their loyal support, you know, as to me, they're selling a product, you know, like they're selling a product with people's discretionary income. It should be your discretionary income that you're spending on these tickets.
Yeah.
And Josh Eisenberg says it in the chat here, and feel free to get you guys, thoughts in if you're tuning in on Facebook Live. He says the tickets are sold at great value, and that's absolutely true.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the tickets that I had were $21 prorated. I think they've now gone up to $26. I don't know because I didn't get the email, but this is what I've heard from other people.
I've heard the same. Yeah. So you're right, yeah.
But like I just told you guys a second ago, I was selling them for $40. I sell them for $40 every game. So they're only going up $5 to $26.
Right.
So it's not like they're actually correcting the prices of the tickets all the way up to like what these values are that they're getting sold for. They're still well below. They're still a good value for anybody that has a season ticket.
That was one of the things that we kind of mentioned before the podcast is half the reason they're going up is because they're tracking exactly what you do with your tickets. Mm-hmm. And if you're reselling them for $3, $4, $5, I've seen anywhere
like this dude that sits in the press box is selling them for double.
I've seen
we're taking his ticket.
I've seen people say that they've sold them for as much as 8 times their value.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
When you're doing that, we're getting into the pro Atlanta United aspect of why they're justified in the price hikes. If you're selling them for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times worth their value, why is it not okay for Atlanta United to raise their prices then?
Yeah, I mean,
you're taking away that buy.
And people are buying them, right? So you're basically setting the price point for them. And you're totally within your rights to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not picking on those
people.
But
so is Atlanta United.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And that's where I think people are kind of getting maybe, I don't want to say emotional because this is a completely rational thing to be upset about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of lost in the argument is that what you're doing with the resale of these tickets, Atlanta United is kind of making up for themselves. What they could gain in that resale, they're trying to make up for in these price hikes.
Right.
Which makes sense. If you're a company trying to make money and you see that the product you're selling is now being resold for double, triple, quadruple its value, why wouldn't you raise the price?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
totally.
Just perfect economic sense. I understand that it's not fun or it's not something you want to deal with, or you obviously don't want to pay more money, but that's just something that's just economics.
Right. And what do you guys think about this? Tim Mulligan brings this up in the chat, and you know, we talk about, you know, kind of how they're trying to get new people in the door, but they can't do it. And he says, well, you have 25,000 extra seats for a majority of the games in 300 level. So, I mean, on the other hand, you could just open up more seats and bring in more people, and then you don't have to see these types of price increases necessarily. In the 100, 200 sections.
Yeah, I just don't see that as an option, really. But the thing is, they do open the upper bowl. People complain that they don't do it. Like, they do it. They did it 3 times last year. I think 5 this year, something like that. So they are doing it as they find that the demand of the market would dictate. But there are a ton of logistical hurdles that make it not a feasible option, really.
I've asked the front office guys a couple times why they or if they would ever consider opening up the full stadium on a more regular basis. And it's just not very practical, or it's not reasonable to think that Atlanta United is going to continue to sell out the entire stadium week after week, game right. after game, because eventually that the aspect of opening up the entire stadium loses its value, and people are going to stop going even when it's 70,000.
It's a huge risk, 70, right? Because you're basically you're basically assuming you're going to sell out every game to make the numbers add up.
On top of that, as soon as you open up the upper deck, second tier,
yeah,
all of a sudden every price in the lower level decreases because you've opened up a ton more tickets.
Yeah,
your ticket is a lot harder to sell.
You've increased the supply, which lowers the demand. But you know, maybe in 5-10 years, maybe it will be open for every game. But there's no reason the club to take a risk to just make that call. So that's why you're seeing it escalate. That's why it's a good sign this year that we're seeing 5 games fully open instead of 3. You know, from last year, and who knows? Maybe hopefully if next year they're 6 or 7, that's an even better sign that they're slowly. But there's no reason not to slowly escalate that amount. It's just a business risk.
It's a huge risk for. I mean, has it any MLS team done that?
No,
played in a type 2 of sports stadium that opened up the 300 level essentially. I mean, Seattle doesn't.
Only Seattle has done it like 1 or 2 times.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I mean, it's a huge risk to kind of assume that you're going to continue at this clip going forward. But like you said, Joe, they are accelerating, so maybe in the future we see.
And that's not to say that we hope they don't do that. Like, obviously, I think all of us want to see – there's nothing more than that the three of us would like to see than 17 home games of 70,000 people in the stadium. But there's no reason to take a risk that that's actually going to happen if you did it right now. And it only makes sense to slowly increase that the amount of games that the stadium is fully open. Now, I will say, and another argument I've seen flying around is to partially open it. And I just don't think,
it's the same conversation. You still devalue the ticket that you're buying
in
the lower level if you open up any part of the upper deck. How hard is it to sell your ticket when the entire stadium's open?
I mean, like, just open
right.
the lower half?
It's a lot harder, yeah.
Open, like, the lower half of the 300s, basically?
I'm not sure exactly how they would do
one side
it. Because
or something
you
like
couldn't
that.
Just open a full section because you wouldn't be able to see the field. You wouldn't be able to see half the field because of the curtains would be blocking your way. But and there's other logistical hurdles, too. You would have to have concessions going up there. You would need security. You would need all these things that would just not make business sense for the club.
I think our podcast has been interrupted, the live stream. One of the things that I feel like a lot of fans aren't considering, and this is, again, another pro-Atlanta United aspect of this, is that I think it was Doug Robertson that came out and said that there is a line X thousand long waiting for the people that don't re-up. They're waiting to take your season ticket because this is still, again, from someone who's coming from maybe watching the Falcons or used to those kind of prices or the Hawks or the Braves, this is still a fantastic deal.
Yeah.
And to get season tickets for 17-plus games at $2,000-$3,000 is very much a lot cheaper than what you can get with the Falcons, what you can get with the Hawks, what you can get with the Braves. There are certain scenarios where maybe it's not as cheap, but again, you're just kind of comparing what you find entertaining, what you want to pay money for at that point. But there are people willing for those that aren't going to re-up, for those that are going to, you know, not instead of 4 tickets, they're going to get 2 tickets. There are people in line waiting to take those tickets.
Yeah.
When those people are in line, you can demand a higher price. And why? I just don't understand why you want Atlanta United to increase their prices as a fan, as a fan of the club, as a fan of the team. You want them to increase your. It's going to suck out of your pocket, sure. But when you're talking about the state of the club, the financial aspect of the club, you want these things to happen because that means your club is doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you have clubs like Chicago who have to lower the prices to get people in the seats that you start having problems.
Yeah, it's just a sign of the interest level. Now, I will say there should be, you know, like the supporter section tickets need to remain at a level that is affordable for anybody. You know, like there's a certain set of tickets that should be very affordable. But like when you're talking about club tickets, when you're talking, you know, for all you can eat and drink and stuff like that, you know, like jack those prices up, you know, like at least for what they're worth, you know. But I am a little worried about a potential, like, for lack of a better word, whitewashing of the crowd if like all the tickets just go up and up and up and up. But you know, like I said, the increased ticket price is a good metric for the club. It's a sign of positive.
Let's
health.
Know things are going the right way. It's still the hottest ticket in town. So I mean, yeah, I understand it sucks. I understand. I get it. You know, but at the same time, you got to look at it from the club's perspective. Like, look, this is a commodity we have, and we obviously want to. It is a business, so we got to make money off of it. You know, we have people waiting in line to get what you're giving up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to up the prices, if nothing else, just to make sure that we're still viable. And again, most MLS teams, I think, don't make a profit most years.
Yeah,
is that not right?
Well, I don't
it's
know.
It's what I've heard. It's the rumor. All the pro rel people say that MLS teams don't make a profit. So if Atlanta United can at least move in that direction or is already in that direction, then this is a positive step.
Joe does mention one thing, though, and I think you know we kind of led off saying that there are some kind of maybe over-the-top reactions from a kind of sentimentality standpoint of thinking, you know, that the founding members should have their price frozen or whatever. I mean, you do worry when you look around you at other major sports. You look at the other Atlanta teams. You consider MLS as hitting a period of growth, particularly in Atlanta, where they might actually start to be that viable, profitable product that so many of the clubs struggle to be right now, Eric. I think that you do run the risk of we see the same thing over the next 2-3 years, and then you're talking about really pricing people out, and that's something similar that we've seen with NBA crowds, mm-hmm. NFL crowds. It doesn't mean you can't get butts in the seats necessarily. I mean, if they keep the product on the pitch that they have now, I think they'll still sell out.
Yeah.
But it would drastically, I think, change the atmosphere. And that's definitely one of the special things about Atlanta United right now.
Yeah.
It's just it's so fun to go. And that's why tickets are going for double in the supporter section.
Right.
You know, because the experience is such a unique, special thing that you don't get at really any other sporting event night in and night – well, game in and game out in
yeah.
Atlanta.
David Carpio asks if we can move on from the price points for the supporter section, which those have seen very minimal increase. Well, minimal.
And it's proportional, right?
I mean,
it's more about, particularly when you consider the economics, it's really more about the percentage increase, including the people that are buying the tickets.
Right. So he asks.
That's really what it's about.
He states that it's the rest of the stadium that has issues with the price increases. So again, we look at the club section and how it's gone up 29%. Was it not when you guys had said that the club section tickets are the ones that get resold the most?
Because people look at those as this is a great team. It's a great time. It's Mercedes-Benz club level. This must go for, you know, way more than whatever the club. I mean, those are numbers I don't deal with them, buy tickets. But it's interesting where I sit in 133, and our tickets didn't go up that much. And I see the same faces.
Yeah.
Again, leads me to believe they're looking at the individual section, saying how can we discover what the actual value is here based on resale? And they looked at, you know, rampant, you know, supporter section. People always talk about, oh, there are all these people here that are only here the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're looking at rampant resale in the supporter section and then just huge increase in that from the face value in the club section. So that's the reason I think we're hitting on those two, is because those two sections indicate exactly what drove the decision, which was how much are these tickets actually going for?
Right.
What are they actually worth?
Look, if no one resold their tickets and everyone just kept going to the games, I would have no problem with the fans. I mean, not that I don't have a problem with it now, because if you don't say anything, then the club is going to assume that you have that they can just do this whenever they want, and you don't want that.
Yeah,
so you want some kind of outcry, which is fine. I'm not crapping on the outcry. That's
same.
This is sports.
Yeah,
At the same time, if no one resold their season tickets, the price would probably stay the same. But because everyone's selling them at, again, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times worth their value, again, Atlanta wants some of that money.
Mm-hmm.
They want a piece of that pie. And it makes perfect financial sense for them to, you know, get some of that for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, the Atlanta United resale market in general is crazy. I mean, we all remember the scarf coin incidents of 2016 Yeah, I mean, like, everything Atlanta United
was crazy.
Yeah, like, there is a clear, real value to Atlanta United, and I hope they capitalize on it like they are, but have it remain relatively affordable.
And it still is.
And,
I mean, look,
it still
again,
is.
Everyone hates the increase, but it's still one of the most affordable things for affordable tickets for what you're getting. Not only are you getting the atmosphere, but you're getting everything else that the club does, you know, beyond the actual play on the field. You're getting the, you know, the Atlanta United bubble that is as tight as community as you can possibly imagine. For the founding members, you're still going to get all the goodies that you get for being founding members throughout the year. You know, it's a good value for what you're getting. It's a fantastic value for what you're getting. Atlanta United knows that. You know that because the way you're reselling these tickets proves that you know that.
Right.
Yeah, of course. So.
That's why, like I said, that's why no one wants to give up their season ticket because they don't want to lose money on it.
And people are like, hey, that might be double your ticket price, but it's $40. It's still a great deal, you know, even secondhand.
Tim Mulligan asked, what's the rumored numbers on the season ticket holder wait list? I think we have 37,000 season ticket holders now.
Didn't Doug Roberson tweet that out?
Doug Roberson said there was an X number.
Yeah, he didn't
X thousand number.
He just said thousands more.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let's assume it's just 5,000. That's still enough to drive the price up a little bit.
Yeah.
If it's 10,000, that's even more. I mean, the higher that number is, and I imagine that number is pretty high. Because they're not going to tell you what that number is, because as soon as you hear what that number is, you're not going to want to – you'll be like, well, what's the point of even joining the wait list?
Right, and they would never let it go. Yeah. And it's not – we know it's not super, super high, like 20,000 or 30,000 or something. If that were the case, they would open up the whole stadium. In that case, you could just do that. So we kind of know a range, but no, they would never say publicly what the wait list is.
Jeffrey Miles Goldstein brings up a good point. I understand the increase, but it's a hit to the season ticket holder that goes every game and doesn't profit off of
I feel you
true,
on that.
True.
I feel you on that. Unfortunately, my section wasn't hit. Again, the voice of the people checking in here, season ticket holder Josh Bagriansky. It's no question, because you're like, oh, man, all these other jerks are selling all their tickets all the time, you know, sitting in the press box with Joe. That's probably where they all are. but to me, I think they're perfectly within their rights to do that. But that it is like, well, the price is going way up for me because you – told the club that these seats are worth way more than, you know, maybe what they're going for. But, I mean, that's what being a season ticket holder is all about.
Honestly,
right?
The harsh way of putting this is that the fans are the reason these tickets are going up as high as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
well, we drive the value.
Especially outside of the supporter section where those tickets that are resold aren't going for nearly as high as what the club seats are going.
Yeah.
So that's why,
you,
that's
though,
why,
Jeffrey.
You, that's
you,
why
man.
You see the club seats going up even higher than everywhere else is because those are the tickets that are getting resold for the most money.
Yeah, I mean, they were told these are worth way more than what we're selling them for.
But for someone who's frustrated because they haven't, you know, they haven't profited off their tickets because they've been going to all the games, I would encourage those people to just think about, you know, has the money you've spent on Atlanta United been worth the joy that Atlanta United has given you back in terms of going to the games? And I think all those people would also say it's great value for that reason as well. So,
thus the reason for your going to all the games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't charge you anything on the Mouths of South podcast, so just be thankful for that.
You can donate to the Patreon, right?
Yeah, patreon.com/MOTS podcast. When you decide to not re-up on your tickets, send that money our way.
That's extra discretionary income.
Yeah, we can do some things with it. We actually, since you brought it up, we are doing some kind of a giveaway. It looks like we're going to give away another jersey of choice. I think we're going to have a second place prize with accessory like a hat or scarf, whatever you want, you'll get to pick. And the way we're gonna do it over the course of about 4 or 5 weeks. We're gonna do like a Mouths of the South trivia, I think is what.
Cool.
That's the idea we came up with. It's still in the works, so we'll see if it actually comes out. But that's a prepare for that in the next couple weeks.
Start scrolling to the bottom of the feed and start listening to the back issues.
Yeah, it'll be easy at first, and it'll get progressively harder, and then what the idea is that the most avid MOTS podcast listeners are going to theoretically win this thing. So any last thoughts on the tickets?
Good talk.
I think we've covered
good
it.
Talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully no one's too pissed at us for anything that we may have said. I think we were pretty fair, though.
Yeah. And hopefully if we're having this discussion again, you know, next year, the year after that, then I think there's reason to have more.
You can fully expect, at least for the next few years, as long as this club is still gaining popularity, that the tickets are going to increase.
They'll increase.
It's going to go up.
Right,
yeah.
But you won't see disproportion.
But time out. If you see the club seat tickets go for even more money next year.
Right. Right.
You're going to see something similar.
Right.
Because, again, Atlanta United is going to want a piece of that pie that they're not already getting. Because, again, this is a business.
I would hope that just next year when this happens or if something similar happens that they do have some sort of communication behind it.
Absolutely. Because I think they might have missed the mark on that one, because it just seems like they kind of without any kind of emotion just said, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Or with any kind of sympathy or, you know, a lack of understanding, just sent out the email and here you go.
Yeah.
Which we obviously aren't privy to what the discussions were beforehand, but
I don't think fans appreciated
the
bomb
email,
being
Josh?
Dropped.
Did you get the email?
Yes. And I checked my email to make sure, and it was Tuesday.
Okay.
About 10:30 a.m.
But
that's the time no one sees stuff, right?
Can you read the email?
That's.
Do you have it on you?
Yeah, actually, I actually.
They should have done it Friday at like 5 o'clock. Then yeah.
Well, the thing is, I don't know. Maybe people got a different email from me, but it basically just says there's more to come in 2019, and says here's your membership plan, and I pay in installments, and the amount is increased. So I didn't get it like a dear season ticket holder or anything. They were just like, here's your number for next
year. They didn't even wine you and dine you before
No, nothing at all. that's what I got. It's just
PG, man.
It's just basically.
I censored myself.
Keep it PG, man.
So I don't know. They might have kind of known they screwed up on this or would be perceived to do that. And it's definitely not. The email, I didn't even know until I saw you guys talking about it. And people talking about it on Twitter. I didn't see the email because it kind of floated beneath the. Neither did Joe. And as we all know, Joe is to blame for selling his tickets for twice and maybe the amount and being in the press box.
If you have any thoughts,
blame Joe for the.
Yeah. if you have any thoughts on the ticket price increase, hit us up on Mazda South podcast email, motspodcast@gmail.com. Go ahead.
Or go to DirtySouthSoccer.com and write a fan post. We would love to hear.
Always.
Put your thoughts out there. We'll publicize them.
And we can, I mean, at the end of the podcast, we can try to go back and hit some of the questions if you guys still have some. So hit us up if you want to. We're on the Facebook chat, and we see there's a few of you that have some questions, so we might come back to that in a little bit. We wanted to move on to news.
Soccer?
Actual soccer. News
on
news on the homegrown front. Carlton and Kunga both called up to the MLS homegrown game, which is fantastic. I'm going. Are you going? I'm gonna try to go.
I'm not sure if I'm going. Actually, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna do my best to go.
Dirty South Soccer should have a representative there, though.
Yes.
I was surprised that Kunga seems to have, like, at least as far as MLS concerned, has kind of jumped over Goslin. I mean, Goslin was kind of one of the, you know, he and Carlton were signed at the same time to their pro contracts.
It seemed like they were going to be like the future of the team together. Yep. They were going to come up. It was going to be like a who was it? It was a Freddie and Hayward with the Braves.
They
all thought they were going to come up together.
But, you know, Goslin has not had a great year in USL. And the last few games, he hasn't been on the bench, and I don't think he's even come in to play in the games in some of them. I haven't been following too closely. But, yeah, that was just kind of interesting to me. And that, you know, good for Kunga that he made it.
And it's Tony Annan, so.
Yeah.
I don't know how much pull he had with actually selecting these players, but.
Yeah, so I was told that he had a consultation call with the league, and then basically he gave his thoughts. They asked him some questions on players he liked, and then after the call, they said, all right, we'll get back to you with the team. We're going to pick it. So he kind of had an input, but he didn't know who was going to. It was news to him.
And just glancing at the roster, it looks like other than Philadelphia Union, who obviously we know the two center backs that came through the academy, they have, I think, five. Looks like no one got more than two other than them.
I can imagine.
Picking, they basically had to cut it off.
They probably wanted to spread it out, too, among the teams. They didn't want it to be loaded up with any, you know, with a certain academy, even like, you know, Atlanta, Dallas, or some of the best academies.
Should have been a fan 11 for the homegrown, and, you know, Bello would be starting. And also, you know, you've been maybe jumping Chris Goslin. I think it's important to realize that Lagos Kunga is kind of a late bloomer. I think he's a couple years older.
He's older,
So it's not a complete. You know, we're not coming out saying, "Oh, Goslin's a bust. He's not going to make it." I mean, he's learning his way in the professional. He's 18 years old, and I think Lagos.
Goslin. Yeah. I think
Goslin's 18
Goslin,
or 19.
Goslin, probably 18. I was gonna say, is he even 18?
He's 17 or 18. I would say.
I know Kunga has, I think, a year on them.
Yeah, because Kunga was with the U-20s at the U-20 World Cup last year.
Right. So, but I think it's interesting.
Yeah, it caught my eye. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Didn't know. Good for Lagos.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to ask Austin that question, though. That's for sure.
No, I don't. That's it. Do that to a child? That would be terrible. What's wrong with you?
It was definitely cool to see those two names called up, just being, you know, obviously Atlanta United players. But moving to the actual game that was played.
Oh, wait, Brandon, are you going to the airport? He says, peace out, guys, 3:30 a.m. wake-up call.
Oh,
please let us know because we have a couple questions for you if you're still on. go ahead, Eric.
Moving on to the actual game that was played this past weekend, Atlanta United versus Philadelphia Union. 2-0 win for Atlanta United away from home in Chester, Pennsylvania. Have you guys ever been to Pennsylvania, Chester?
Funny you ask. Yes, I was in Chester like a week before that game.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, that was not what I was expecting the response to.
I was like, no.
Well, yes, I have been to Chester.
I was expecting to be like, yeah, I can tell you. It's not a fun place to be.
Tell me about it, guys.
Outside of the actual stadium, it's a poop hole.
It's hashtag gritty.
Yeah.
Really? Grit.
Yeah. I was there for a wedding, a friend's wedding, which was not in Chester. It was in Westchester, which is a completely different town.
Yes.
But we had some time kill. We had like 4 hours to kill between the end of the wedding and the reception. So we went to Chester because we found out there was a casino there. So we wanted to kill time at the casino. We go to the casino. Turns out it's like on the same premises as the state penitentiary, and they're basically like both wrapped around by like the same barbed wire fence, and like you basically share a parking deck with like the prison visitors and the casino. So yeah, fun times.
High society right there.
Yeah.
What is going on?
Definitely not Vegas.
Interesting.
Pretty sure I saw El Senio like sitting at the Let It Ride table with like a half burned cigarette in his mouth.
That's what they do it in Chester.
How far outside of Philly is it? Is it like way out there like with Frisco, with Dallas, or Ridgeview?
I
want
to say it's
Chicago?
A couple it's, like
it's not
maybe
that far.
An hour away?
No, it's less than that. It's right next door. Yeah,
I went up there but it was like a birthday gift to me. That was before Atlanta United was even a thing, and mm-hmm. It was cool. Look, I
were you a Union fan? Were you a Union
fan
before the
day?
Okay.
For that day, I was, because I wanted to sit with the Sons of Ben and be in the supporter section and all that stuff. And
cool.
So I had it's a great stadium. It's a great
location,
great
stadium.
View, but everything else around that, not great. So again, Atlanta United wins 2-0. It's a fantastic win, rebounding off of what happened with FC Dallas. It was for a lot of fans, it's going to be like, you know, they just showed up and they'd kind of forgotten what had happened just a couple of days before. But you know, in the back of their minds, they were looking to rebound off of that, what happened with FC Dallas. Because, I mean, that obviously is something that has not happened to Atlanta, I think, ever.
Yeah.
And you wondered how they might rebound from something like this. And they did it beautifully.
And Tata and the players talked after the Dallas game, after the capitulation happened. They were already concerned about kind of the reaction, how the team was going to respond to that. And then, you could just tell. And then the quotes after the game, after Philadelphia, you know, a lot of them were still thinking back to that Dallas game and kind of talking about how much better the win was because of what happened.
Yeah, and on the flip side, you had Philadelphia Union, who were trying to get back at Atlanta for, not really at Atlanta, but just trying to prove that they belonged in the game that they obviously got beat in when they played in Atlanta, obviously because of the encroachment on the
encroachment
D.
Encroachment
on the D, that fiasco, and what ensued afterwards. Obviously, they wanted to make up for themselves and to prove to, I think, MLS and Atlanta that, you know, what you did last time was a fluke. And I'm surprised. Well, I'm not surprised. I shouldn't be surprised, because with the amount of travel Atlanta United did with the game that was FC Dallas, I'm not surprised that Philadelphia Union, and it's just their style of play, they came out pressing.
Had a week of rest.
Exactly. They had a full week of rest, so they were ready for this match. You knew that what had happened in Atlanta. I think Bedoya had comments on it about how we were cheated from the game or something to that effect.
Hilarious. Hilarious.
But yeah, it was great to see that their energy was high, and it was great to see that Atlanta United responded, because I always look at when Atlanta United plays other pressing teams, and the Red Bulls do a great job of what they do. Not many teams do it to that level, and so when I envision Philadelphia pressing with the young guys that they have, with the with the talent that they do have, I figured that it might cause some trouble in the back for Atlanta United, and at first I think it did. And then they figured out a way to kind of roll through that. I think Gressel, Larenowitz in the midfield were a big reason why Atlanta United was able to control that first half.
The first half, I thought, you know, you really got Philadelphia's best shot.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned guys struggling with the press. I mean, we saw even Parkhurst. I mean, Perez as well misplaced several passes out of the back. Dan Gargan kind of hit it on in the broadcast. Obviously, they need to be more crisp, and you need to get better movement off the ball from your midfielders. But it doesn't surprise you, like you said, Eric, coming off cross-country flight, you know, a devastating loss, having only a couple days of rest. It doesn't surprise you that that pressure impacts Atlanta United in the first half. But you kind of roll with their punches, take their best shot. They didn't have a ton of great chances if you go back and look at XG and all that. While they did threaten, Atlanta United rolled with the punch and then just knocked them out in the second half.
I thought it was – I mean, the 2-0 win for Atlanta United was a little unfair to Philadelphia because I thought they created enough to at least score one, make it a game.
The first half especially.
Yeah, they couldn't finish.
Yeah, they
just couldn't finish.
And that's been just the theme of their season. CJ Sapong, I think, after this game, that made it one shot on target for him in eight games, I want to say.
Which is laughable for a striker.
For a starting striker. The fact that he even started all those games and was performing to
the... I feel like you trip, fall, and then bump your head into a few more shots than that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of their chances, they had some dangerous attacking play. They just weren't even getting a shot off in general, and I think that kind of hurt them on the XG sheet.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
You would say.
They were a little underrated on the – yeah.
Right.
They
missed
on a couple balls.
Mm-hmm, cross gets fizzed across the box, but no one gets a foot to it or something like that. So, it was dangerous in the first half, but thankfully we have Aaron Hyde who you know, got stuck in with the lads at halftime and changed the game.
Go ahead.
It was nice to see. I mean, you saw basically, you know, they talk about, you guys mentioned the how would the team respond mentally, and they really got hit in the mouth. I mean, they had to really respond to Philly taking their absolute best shot and going into the halftime break and really regrouped, and the second half was brilliant. I mean, I thought the second half was similar to the Dallas second half until the last 5 minutes where you're just, you know, I thought it was just a fantastic, fantastic performance in the second half.
They were
to finish.
Very early on in that first half, probably midway through the first half, I think, there was one. Everyone remembers the fantastic LGB pass from him to that sets up the PK for Martinez. Everyone remembers that pass. What everyone seems to kind of forget is that he had a terrible pass that led to the that shot that I forget who tried to curl around Guzan into that upper right-hand corner that misses, I don't know by how much, I forget how close it actually was. But again, that's a chance that is almost given up by Atlanta United because LGP plays a terrible pass up the field that goes straight to a Philadelphia Union player who rushes up and crosses.
And as an example of the high press working initially as well.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of the things they had to kind of overcome very early on.
That's the dichotomy that is LGP. You know, you're going to get good and you're going to get bad. Harris Kruskic had a great piece on him earlier this week where LGP talked to training and he was basically said, "Yeah, I know I'm going to screw up, but I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to stop. You know, playing my game, playing this. You know, trying to create from the back where it's possible. So that's just something. You know, every time he makes that mistake, he gets a lot of grief from the fans, but you've got to understand that's the way he plays, and it's going to pay. And he's also going to create chances for you as well.
Yeah, and he certainly makes up for it defensively. So it's not like it's not all bad or anything like that.
He takes risks. I mean, that's the type of player he is, and you don't want to tell a player, especially a center back, not to be yourself. I mean, the last thing you want to see is a tentative, LGP there.
And he's got a perfect partner alongside a guy like Michael Parkhurst who isn't going to do that. He's going to be your rock. He's going to be your stable guy who's going to give you more consistent performances.
And again, interesting, in the Philly match, we saw Parkhurst for some of the first times I've really seen him misplace a couple passes, make a couple errors. So
again the press.
That's what, to me, this was – and you guys on Five Stripe Final called it, Joe. I mean, you guys both – you and Sam Jones both said a big win for Atlanta United. I was really – a little more skeptical because I knew we were going to get Philly's best shot for the revenge factor for their own undoing, screwing themselves over. I don't really understand that.
Encroachment.
But also just, I mean, I think Atlanta United coming to town, you're getting the opposition's best shot every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And you took that best shot at a moment where you could have folded because of what had happened in Dallas, and instead you deservedly win the match.
I thought one of the great things I saw that we haven't seen much out of Joseph was the fact that he kind of dropped into the midfield much, much more than he normally does. On one occasion, it sets up a fantastic run for Miggy. where if not for a great save by Andre Blake, you know, we're up – Atlanta United's up 1-0 in the 11th minute or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You saw him do a lot more of that.
And he set up the goal of the week. I mean, he really had maybe the hardest pass in all of that in the eventual Tito goal.
Not only that, but I thought he had a lot to do with the giving Almiron the space to make the run he went on.
Agree.
Because his presence there drew in
– Drew both center backs, right?
Drew both center backs and allowed – gave Almiron that room.
And I was going to – I wonder if maybe part of the reason he was doing a little more of that is because he knew he was going against a couple of inexperienced center backs who were going to be more likely to kind of – drift with him, and he could pull them out of position and give his teammates more room to work with.
Not only that, but I mean, just the fact that Philadelphia was pressing gives Atlanta United a little more room in the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
So that allows him to have that space to, you know, pick up the ball. It was a lot of the long balls from Guzan. It was second balls. It was stuff like that that typically Atlanta United doesn't do a very good job of. I think the one thing that Atlanta United could, if we're critiquing, you know, fundamental stuff, it's second balls. I don't think they do a very good job of. But
I've always felt like Atlanta United's attack is just seems to me to be flowing the best when Joseph is getting on the ball more, when he's getting more touches, when he's getting involved in the game.
Especially this season. I mean, he's shown an expansiveness to his game, and we kind of already knew he had it because he did play underneath and wide at Torino. So we knew he could drop deep, but he didn't. He's doing that a lot more this season than last. I'm not sure exactly why it is, but it's something – I don't know if maybe it's the Assad-Barco change because Barco is more of a possession player. He wants to combine as opposed to Assad, who wants to, you know, run at the last line, play more direct. I don't know what it is, but to me it seems like Joseph is getting, by design, much more involved in the build-up to the attack than he was last year.
I think we've been – you know, one of the things we've seen with this team, just a general trend with their attacks, is we've seen a lot of crossing this year. And I think that Joseph has kind of found it easier for him to find room, and it's harder for defenders to track him when he can drop back a little bit, play 1-2, and then be sprinting into the box when a cross comes in. It's just harder for a defender to mark a player who's doing that than someone who's just kind of sitting on the back line.
And that's why he scored like some ridiculous amount of goals from inside the six. It's not because he's getting lucky. It's because his timing runs perfectly and we're getting on the end of those crosses.
Right. You're not seeing him like leap over center backs. You're seeing him darting in, you know, right in front of a center back or behind, you know, just it's his movement that creates those opportunities for himself.
The one thing I loved about the second goal Atlanta United got, or no, sorry, the first goal, the PK, whatever. That run that Almiron makes is the exact kind of run that when Joseph is playing more of a hit the ball to me and run type of striker, I want to make the runs Almiron makes because it's a beautifully bent run.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph tends to make the runs that are just, again, I've said it before, but just running on train tracks. What Almiron does is it allows, one, the pass is beautiful, but it allows him, he gives himself space to run onto while not being in an offside position. It also takes the defender off guard because all of a sudden you're running a completely different direction than what you anticipated.
It's interesting because I think Joseph's game, when we first saw him, like, oh, he's pretty fast, he finishes well. That's kind of what I saw him as, a guy that's going to get in over the top all the time. But it's turned out he's more of he likes to play back to goal and mix it up a little bit. So it helps to have a player like Almiron playing underneath to make a lot of those runs, and certainly they can also come from deeper, which is sometimes more dangerous, which is basically what happened on the second goal, is Miguel comes from behind Joseph and he's able to hold it up. So I just don't know you're ever going to get that type of play.
Maybe not.
I just think it's a style of play as a striker.
It's just something that I wish
if
I could be nitpicky about one thing with Joseph, I wish it could be that, because, or I want it to be that, because I feel like he could really even further separate himself for the rest of MLS if he just kind of added that and was able to. Here's the thing, though. I don't know that he's fast enough for that, because I think Almiron obviously proved that he's fast enough for that. I don't know if Joseph, not to say he's not fast, but maybe what we see is just the quickness of Joseph and
absolutely,
not the top speed. And maybe the top speed isn't as high as we think it is, because he's certainly quick. He can pounce on you quicker than anyone else. But I wonder if he has that top speed to get around a player just the way that Miggy did.
Yeah.
Or the strength for that
matter. I think you're spot on right there. I think Miggy's better over a long distance.
Yeah.
And there was a play, even I remember in this match, where Joseph got 1v1 with the center back. Can't remember if it was Trusty or McKenzie, and tried to knock do the Tito move, knock it around it, and go. and he got nowhere close. So, I don't think he's a run-at-you, full-head-of-steam type of player. And you mentioned not getting in behind those over-the-top balls. I think we've really – that's shown this year because Tito's been out. Because yeah. Tito is that player for Atlanta United who gets onto those long diagonals over the top, uses his pace, and gets in behind. Not so much a Joseph or a Barco or a Gressel. So I think one of the reasons that's really shown this season, Joseph's kind of lack of desire to make those runs, or whatever you want to call it, I would just call it his playing style. But I think that's shown mostly this year because Tito has been on the pitch kind of exploiting that space that he usually would.
And I wonder if we just under the assumption that's part of his game. Because, I mean, if you think of the way he scores goals, it's not so much over the top balls.
No, I mean, it's running on crosses, like
yeah,
Joe said.
I think it's more of...
his movement's unbelievable.
I feel like those balls get forced, and then we just assume, well, why is he getting onto those balls? And we just think it's Joseph's mm-hmm. fault for not being able to do that.
And that's when you kind of see him get frustrated, right. You know, like, oh, yeah. It's a tough one to go get.
It may just be now that that's just not in his game, his skill set, which is fine, especially if you're scoring goals the way he's scoring goals, which is more... I mean, I just think of the Houston game and how... from last year, where he scored a hat trick? I think it was a hat trick. When were they on the 10? Second or first game at Bobby Dunn? Whatever. But the way he scores goals isn't with over the top balls. When is he? I'm trying to think when he ever scored a goal with it where he's.
Oh, are you thinking of the Chicago, the brace at Bobby
Dunn?
Oh,
Dunn, I say Houston? Gets, yeah, my bad.
Yeah, he gets the
Houston.
One. Yeah,
yeah. Or Chicago, yeah.
He gets slotted in on that one where he dribbles the keeper.
Yeah.
But nothing, yeah, I don't really remember him over the top. I mean, to me,
we see it so often from, you know, balls from back from LGP or Gress or whatever. Maybe that's just not. That probably just isn't in the skill set.
I think Almiron and Tito are the ones that you typically want to be receiving those types of balls to run onto.
I thought, again, Larry and Gressel were instrumental. Larry or Gressel in the role that he's playing to fill Nagby's role is definitely
different. He has improved as a player from last season.
Yeah, because I mean,
his role is different, though. Go ahead, Eric. Yeah.
Last year, middle of the field, Gressel was a nightmare. And you saw him get moved out wide, and his game was dramatically different. His role was simpler, and I even said I've argued with fans on Twitter that, you know, Gressel is best when you really make his role on the field really, really simple. Obviously, you move into the middle of the field, that complicates a lot for him. Mm-hmm. He's proving to me that I'm wrong, which is fine. Go Gressel.
I don't think I don't think you were wrong. I would say that
I think he's gotten better at doing something different.
Exactly. He's basically disproven, because I thought the same thing. You know, the knock on him, at least for me, was that his touch was just a little heavy. And when you have that heavy touch in the middle of a congested midfield, that can easily lead to a quick counterattack. And when you turn the ball over in such a vital part of the field, those are very dangerous counterattacks, more so than when the same thing happens from a wide position. Yeah. So that's why it was a little safer to play him out there. And also, at the same time, you're not going to get marked as tight when you're out there typically, or you can at least find space. So he was able to kind of – I mean, he did well. He did well to kind of understand his limitations at that point and make the most of what he is able to do, which is amazing, his amazing service into the box. But yeah, like, he's just, to me, as a central midfielder, just a completely different player than he was last year.
Certainly, yeah, he's certainly grown into it.
And, you know, he's just on the ball a lot more, too. I mean, he had some shocking stat lines playing in the middle last year where he would attempt, like, 20 passes the entire game. And so he's not even getting on the ball. And now you're seeing, I mean, it's been upwards of 45, 50 passes that he's attempting, completing a high percentage since he's come in there. Part of it is something I mentioned we discussed last week, is that his role is a little different in the middle, playing more of a right center mid position where he's more comfortable as opposed to like just a straight box to box. But there's no question. I'm with you, Joe. I think Eric was right. And I think, you know, because and that's impressive, because one thing we've kind of talked about with him last year was he's a great rookie, but he is what he is. You know, he's played 4 years of college. You know, this is what Julian Gressel is, which would say he's a good utility guy. We learned he was a very good right wing back. Turns out he's a pretty good option at center mid too.
And look, when his name got brought up with maybe teams in Germany and the second division, I laughed at that a little bit, because I don't know that, because again, that the argument from my angle was, again, he's really good when you really make his role simple. A German team in the second division isn't going to be, they're going
to
want some more complicated stuff than just, I can run down the right
side
and cross
play
the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
It reminds me of like a basketball player who's drafted like in the second round, like, you know, a guy who's like not that heralded. You don't think you're going to get that much from him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he might be good at, like, shooting threes. You know, yeah, and it's right. Like, okay, well, that's cool. At least he's a good three-point shooter. He might have some value here. And then, like, the second year, he's all of a sudden, like, driving and dunking on people. You know, it's like, yeah. Whoa, he could actually be – he's getting better. He could actually be really good. Kind of how I feel. Like, I feel like his potential is much higher than I initially anticipated.
Yeah, and this is really, the second game we've seen him in that role?
Third match, because Orlando, we had Orlando, Dallas.
And this is the first one where we were like, he looked really good. And not that he hasn't looked good before, but this one, against Philadelphia, he looked exceptionally well.
Another area I really noticed him is that he's so good in the press. And it's almost like the press has come back since Nagby went away. Got hurt. And it's something people talked about, that maybe the one part Nagby wasn't a great fit for Lanny Knight's system was he's not necessarily a ball-winning type who's going to get forward. Julian Gressel has been breaking up the play. I mean, he was parked in the Philly half with the interceptions. And
it was after it was like a few minutes after the Almiron, when Almiron forces a great save from Andre Blake in the 11th minute. It was a few minutes after that where he basically steals the ball off of a defender who just got played off a goal kick right outside the box. And
that was the Tito chance.
That was
right?
The Tito chance that he really didn't have any other choice but to blast it, you know.
I think that that was kind of after that game. My initial what I was so in awe of, it was just his ability to read the game from that central midfield spot, because that's something that typically takes kind of a long time. That's something that you see in like veteran players, and he is an older, you know, second year player. He's not your typical guy who, like, you know, he's a youngster coming up through the academy. So he does have a lot of experience being in his second year. But I was just so amazed because he hasn't played the position that often. He always seemed to be popping up in the right spots. I think he had a little bit of difficulty early in the game, but I just feel like he grew into the game so well. And it just really gives me a lot of hope that he's going to be able to keep his place in the lineup. I mean, I know we have Eric Rometty coming in. Hopefully Darlington Nagby will be back at some point. But, like, it's just so amazing. Julian Gressel has started all but one game this season.
That's amazing.
When we came into this season, we had Darlington Nagby coming into central midfield. We had, you know, all these spots. We had Barco coming in.
We had Carmona.
And everyone, yeah.
we did have Carmona at one
point during preseason. But you thought, you're just like, okay, well, Gressel will be a nice bench piece for us this year. Well, you know, as he says, he always says this in press conferences, he's, you know, going to work his butt off in training and try to force his way in, and he's started every game but one this year, which is just incredible.
We've had the same conversation about Larenowitz and what his role was supposed to be before the season started, and now with the changes right before the first kick, you know, things obviously got messed up, and he's playing a lot more than I think he anticipated playing.
And even coming into this season, I think the club maybe was thinking that he would be the player in the center of midfield that got phased out by going and getting Nagby, not intending to sell Carmona, and then kind of being on the record that we're going to go find another center mid the entire time as well. So I think even the club was not expecting him to make this type of jump in that part of the park. I mean, I think everyone is pleasantly surprised.
And if we want to talk about Rometty coming in and kind of tactically how this is going to play out, you know, I had heard that Rometty was coming in to help, you know, give Laurentowicz some time to rotate, you know, freshen up his legs for the preseason. Or for the postseason, rather. I'm just interested to see kind of how his entrance into the team factors into Gressel's play in central midfield, and just to see how that dynamic works out.
Well, do you guys think he breaks in immediately, or he's going to have to really earn his spot? Like, if Gressel keeps playing like this, is he coming off the bench for the next month or so, or what do you guys think?
I think Rometty will primarily be a bench player, or be a substitute in the 60th minute to lock a game down. That's how I see him.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
I mean, I
it's so hard. It's like
I feel like he was brought over with. I thought I was under the understanding.
Well, at that time they didn't expect Gressel to be playing like this, though.
True, but let's kind of put a caveat on this. It was a team that was pressing. FC Dallas wasn't necessarily bunkering the entire time.
Yeah.
It's a great pattern over the course of the games that he's played at that position, but we got to see a longer sample size. We got to see a bigger sample size. That's the job too.
But I do think that, to maybe some people's surprise, Rometty comes in having to kind of wrestle control of that job from Gressel, which we didn't expect to happen.
Yeah, that's good for Atlanta United. Yeah. That's good for Rometty. That's good for Gressel.
It's hard for me to see him coming in and playing instead of Laurentiewicz, though? Like, because Jeff just seems like such a key part of the midfield, you know, in terms of communicating, kind of getting everybody on the same page and organizing things. He seems so vital. And so it's hard for me to see him.
What were the numbers on him again?
Who?
Rometty.
What numbers? Oh, his transfer value?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. It was like, I'm not sure.
Because I'm trying to think
Did they announce the amount that they spent?
I don't remember. That would be an indication as to whether they're going to start him or not,
like,
right?
It's like 2 or 3 million.
Yeah, I mean, he had to have been, for a TAM signing, he had to have been like
two million.
2 million, yeah, okay.
Is that someone you just put on the bench and... Because Laurentiewicz doesn't make it that much. Look, I'm not. Look, I'm.
I think long term he'll come in as a starter. Yeah. But I just when he first comes in, obviously he's going to need some time to settle. And I do wonder if Tata will go maybe like in the playoffs if they have like a lead after one leg, you just lock down midfield with Laurentiewicz, Rometty, double pivot.
Oh, okay.
And just, you know, then you have two holding midfielders. It's an option.
Yeah. One other thing that I thought was cool, and that I think Joseph, it's kind of overlooked when it comes to Joseph, is the way he takes his penalty kicks. It's fantastic, especially with Andre Blake.
Yeah.
The two he had in Atlanta and then the one he had in Philadelphia.
Well, we talked all about the first one he took because he didn't do the hop thing.
It is crazy. Go look at that PK again and look how confused Andre Blake looks as soon as the ball's kicked. He gets frozen in midair practically.
I think this is Joseph playing like triple psychology stuff.
Yes.
Because he didn't do the hop. He'd always done the hop, except he didn't do it at home against Blake. Well, then after the game, he said, I didn't do it because he knew, or, you know, because it wasn't going to be effective, blah, blah, blah. And I think Joseph knew that Blake would know that he said that and wouldn't think he would hop,
totally
and then
possible.
He hopped.
I mean,
he was completely crossed up on, you know, because he was expecting.
It's like Inception. You know?
The hop thing is very effective.
With Joseph, it's
somehow.
Somehow the hop thing works.
But with Joseph, it's not like, let's power through. Let's hope he guesses the wrong side. With Joseph, it's, I'm going to make it blank, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make you look like a fool, and you have no idea which way I'm going. Because, look, if Andre Blake just dives to one, at some point, he's going to get one saved on him, because Joseph's PKs aren't anything, they're not super powerful. They're just perfectly placed, and he does a great job of not giving you any indication of which way he's going.
Mm-hmm.
They're not super powerful. They're not, located anywhere ridiculous. They're not upper 90 PK shots or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're just passes into the goal.
I think it's all his penalty is a lot about confusing the goalkeeper.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Which
totally.
Just shows you how swaggy Joseph Martinez is. That's his idea, is to get the goalkeeper off balance.
I encourage everyone to go watch that PK again, because it is a thing of beauty.
And we have seen him. I think he does the hop thingy. Like, he's taken six penalties this year, five or six. He's done the hop thingy on like four of them. I think there's two times.
Okay, so he did it one other time.
I feel like I remember him. Someone correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like I remember him not doing the hop thingy again recently. So, I mean, keepers are definitely struggling with it. And the one that he did miss doing the hop thingy, that is the technical term. was against L.A., and the keeper didn't touch it. He hit the post.
Yeah.
So the keepers are getting nowhere close to his penalty, his hop thingy penalties.
His hop thingy
penalty. I just loved – I loved his quote after the first game in Philadelphia when he didn't do the hop, and he just said someone – they were talking about, you know, whose turn it was, whatever. He said, Miguel told me to take it and to hit a rocket.
Well, he did. Also, I've been racking my brain about this. How do he and Andre Blake know each other?
That's what he said. He said
Copa America, maybe? Jamaica wouldn't have played there.
Yeah. I have no clue. I mean, because these guys.
Joseph.
Maybe some.
I'm wondering if he meant something else by saying that they know each other a little bit.
He did casually stress Joseph out when he cramped up. I don't know if you saw the last game Blake got over him.
That was
like,
weird.
I don't think if you didn't know the guy like on the other team doing that, you would just allow him to come, you know, to stretch you there.
Grab him by the buttocks and lift him up.
Yeah,
whatever have we seen Joseph really do anything for another team, another player like that? Like,
Joseph was the one cramping, right? Blake was the one.
He took one of the nuts.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Right.
And that's why he was helping him with
Joseph understands.
Yeah. Doing something, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. But yeah, no, they definitely, I've never seen him do that to another player or anything resembling.
Because I was thinking about that quote when I saw that, about how you had told me that they told the press that they knew each other. We have
no idea how, but. All right. Moving towards Sunday and this match against Seattle. 2 o'clock start. World Cup starts at 11:30, correct? Or is it noon?
It starts at 11.
11, I'm sorry. Yeah. So that'll be over supposedly around 1.
11 to 1. Before 11 to 1.
Yeah.
About probably.
Assuming there's no extra time or anything.
Maybe there's assuming no extra time, maybe a little longer halftime. But.
So you're getting Atlanta United immediately after the World Cup, which is fantastic. Unfortunately, I have to miss it because of work, but. That sucks. That's my life.
You have to miss the final?
I have to miss the World Cup. I have to miss the Atlanta United game.
Really?
I'm going to be able to watch the Atlanta United game, but I'm just going to be in the stadium, which was...
Oh, that sucks.
I want some prayers.
But whatever.
Are you getting anything for your season ticket, though?
What?
I'm just kidding.
In club, I believe, right?
Yeah. But Seattle Sounders just came off a draw against New England Revolution, 0-0, and what arguably was one of the most boring games of all time. Seattle Sounders before that beating Colorado 2-1 on Wednesday, and the week prior against Portland Timbers 3-2 loss in the Cascadia Cup or match.
So Joseph Martinez is outscoring Seattle Sounders this year.
Yeah, that is a stat that's kind of insane. What's the actual number?
It's 18-15.
18-15, which
15 goals scored for Seattle.
That is a stupid stat. I guarantee that comes up at least 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, for sure. Seattle actually has one of the best defensive records in the league. They've only given up 22 goals, which is very good. But they just can't score
any. Yeah,
that's very Brian Schmetzer to just have an organized defense and then
not be able to do anything.
Not knowing what to do.
Yeah,
what
is that guy exactly? Like, he's very professorial. You know, was he Ziggy Schmidt's? Was he the interim? And they won
and
they won MLS Cup and he kind of hung around.
Exactly,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
he was the interim, and then he won MLS Cup. So
so he stayed there, and
I talked to Jeremiah O'Shan, who's Seattle at heart or Sounders at heart editor over there. He's just an institution in Seattle, and it's kind of hard for people to come to grips with. He might not be the best coach for them, but I mean, he's a guy who played for the indoor team there. He worked at like a sporting goods store. And like everybody knew him in town. Like he's the Jason Longshore of Seattle, but he's also the coach. So it's hard for people to put him on the hot seat.
Jason Longshore one day coaching.
It'll happen.
That's what Brian Schmetzer's.
They're a very defensive team though. Yeah. I mean, I think we can, I'd say Montreal is the only time this season, maybe DC United too, when a team's come to Atlanta, you said this team is going to sit back. Put everyone behind the ball. 0-0 will be just fine with them. Their second leading goal scorer, it's like a bunch of guys with one.
Yeah, they only have one player who scored more than one goal.
Who, of course, is the famous Will Bruin.
Yeah. I mean, it's Will Bruin, yeah.
I mean, the Jordan Morris injury.
Yeah. But here's the thing. The way they play, I don't know that helps. It obviously helps, but I don't know that it really affects much. It doesn't change a lot of these results, I don't think.
Probably not. Their
I think maybe they score
great.
A little more goals, but I think overall they're still the same team.
No,
they're still going to bunker and try to counter you.
I mean, the X factor would be Rui Diaz, Peruvian
new
international.
$7.5 million signing.
Will be there, they said, as long as all the paperwork gets taken care of. I'd imagine coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it sounds
like. So that could be an interest. I mean, basically Atlanta,
so really,
I mean, that's one thing you can't really prepare only so much for this guy. And it might get thrown on the 60th or 70th minute. That could be a problem for Atlanta's defense.
The big thing with this match to me is that you gotta find a way to score against this team that's going to park the bus
and score in the first 15, 20. I mean, Atlanta United's a totally different team. I think when they get that goal, especially at home in those first.
It's super
15,
cliche to say, but the longer this game goes without a goal, the more likely that Seattle's going to find.
Because that's
what
they're
game.
Prepared for. Yeah. That's exactly what they'll have game plan for.
Honestly,
0-0.
I don't think the bunkering. I don't think the bunkering is going to work as well against Atlanta United as it did earlier in the season. Now that Atlanta has kind of transitioned to this 4-2-3-1, they have way more bodies in midfield. It's way easier for Atlanta United to create chaos and havoc when you trap yourself in that deep and you can't get out, basically, is what happens to these teams.
The problem is that when they do play against these teams, look, I've heard over and over that Tata Martino wants chaos and cross into the box. He wants to create that that just craziness in the box so that, you know, Seattle makes a mistake.
Yeah.
They get a you know, some kind of fluky penalty, or they open something up that just happens to bounce Atlanta's way, whatever. But the way that Atlanta United plays when it comes to circulating the ball, and they're just – it's almost like they're too patient. And I feel like they kind of hurt themselves when it comes to that. And they're just honestly just kind of wasting time trying to find, you know, that good pass that opens up, you know, Joseph or Miggy or Tito or whatever, that just doesn't come. It just, more often than not, you're not going to find it. Or if it does happen to blossom in a matter of a second, it quickly gets closed down by whatever defenders are nearby. That's the thing that I think that I want to see Gressel improve on, is a team likes, presumably, like what Seattle's going to do, where he's now forced to take the ball, control the ball, move the ball, make decisions, while he's got people just surrounding him. Because he might have the ball, you know, right outside of where the bus is parked, but he's going to eventually have to find his way into the bus, I guess.
Right.
He's going to find his way through defenders. He's going to have to find himself, controlling that aspect of the midfield somehow.
Your two ways, I think, of unlocking that basically are Joseph with his amazing movement getting in on one of those crosses, or some sort of interchange with Almirón and Barco.
They just look against Philadelphia. Look how long it took him to find a goal at home.
But they didn't bunker.
They did, though.
Toward the end, they did. Yeah. Well, they were but I'd say they were forced into it.
No, I'm sorry. At home is what I'm talking about. When they went down to nine men, they were still struggling against a team that bunkered.
We've seen improvement. I think the FC Dallas match, where in the second half up until the goals were scored, I mean, they weren't really even trying to get forward in the second half of that match. So we saw Atlanta United handle that kind of bunkering mentality well. I thought they handled it pretty well against Orlando, although the opening goal, like 3 minutes in, obviously helped. So I think that is a specific weakness that we've seen strides made as Atlanta United players have. I think a big part of it is integrating Barco in, right, and getting chemistry with him. I think that specific area is less – I'm kind of with Joe. I think that area has become less of a worry for me as the season has gone on. I don't know if it's totally formation change, but certainly with Tito back in, Barco getting completely integrated into the lineup, I think we're starting to see Atlanta a little more comfortable unlocking a bunkering defense.
Agree.
What I'd like to see is that happen, but also – because you're gonna, on paper, you're gonna look like a dominant team against a team that parks the bus. But I want them to physically just control every aspect of this game while they're doing it.
Yeah, like don't be worried. Like Montreal, we won 4-1 or whatever, but we were a little nervous for a while.
I want them to create crazy number of chances, even against a team that's just 11 men behind the ball.
And that's especially against a team like Seattle.
That's going to do that.
Yeah, right. And are not getting results themselves doing that. So you would like to see Atlanta, just because of where the two teams are in the table, to get a big result against Seattle regardless of how they play. And then you've got DC United coming next weekend. So you'll have probably two matches in a row where a team comes to town and sits back. So it'll be a good chance to make some progress in that area.
The reason I want this game to go well for Atlanta United is because if they can do it again, well, if they can at least prove that they can dominate a team that parks the bus for the entire 90 minutes, and that's not just controlling the possession or anything like that. It's the number of quality chances created. Preferably, you got 5 or 6 goals against a team that's just been parking the bus all game. But if you can do it against, if you can prove that you can do it against a team like Seattle, who, sure, isn't the greatest team in the world right now, it gives you hope that Atlanta United could potentially do something like something similar in the playoffs against a team that maybe is looking for a certain result to advance in the next round of the playoffs, on aggregate or something like that.
Right.
Because if the first leg of an Atlanta United playoff match doesn't go the right way, then we're looking at facing a very similar situation.
Yeah.
And I want at least some kind of confidence that Atlanta United can absolutely can do something against a team that parks the bus.
Yeah.
And I'm not totally sold that that's there yet. That's my mentality.
Fair.
All right, was that it? We done?
There's nothing else really. Now that we've pissed everyone off about season tickets and talking,
Again, if you have any thoughts on or want to share anything about what we said or want to make a counter argument towards anything we said, give us a, send us an email, motspodcast@gmail.com. You can send them to Dirty South Soccer at where specifically?
Write a fan post on dirtysouthsoccer.com.
There you go.
That's how we look for writers, by the way. If anyone wants to know, we get lots of resumes. Write fan posts.
Do it. Donate to the podcast, patreon.com/MOTS podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at MOTS podcast. I'm at Eric G. Quintana. Josh, where are you at?
You can find me at JoshB914.
And plug everything DSS.
JAPatrick200 is my personal account. I also do a podcast with J. Sam Jones, who is my partner up in the press box.
Oh, it's a podcast now, is it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm off-brand. Off-brand.
What a slip.
The highly distributed audio discussion. It's an H-Dad.
The only H-Dad that you will find anywhere in the world.
That's right.
Yeah.
It will come through your podcast catchers because technology hasn't caught up yet. But, you know.
Oh, it's technology's fault.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are the innovators here.
Yeah, Dirty South Soccer. You guys all know that, so yeah.
Cool, cool. Again, make sure to join us on the next – I don't know what I'm saying. It's so late. Any final thoughts? Anything you guys want to say? Did I wrap it up?
Mark Geiger is a good referee.
Oh.
At me on Twitter
had
if you
to
want.
Do this?
You just got my Twitter handle, so come at me.
At the very end?
Come at me. That's the end. Just get at me on Twitter. Mark Geiger is a good referee.
That was Josh Bagriansky.
Voice of the people.
Oh, my gosh. Hate mail goes to Josh Bagriansky.
Please, send it to me. Don't send it to Eric or Joe.
All right. That'll do it for us. Until next time. See you later, Atlanta.